Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you from the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today we are in the studio with Lake Buckley and Katrine Hall. Welcome to the studio, ladies.
Thank you. Hi. Thanks.
So we are kicking off our Summer of Food. It's a new series that we're doing here on the radio network. And basically, by tuning into Summer of Food, you're going to get a chance to hear the passionate voices of the food movement as they look for solutions to the most pressing issues in food and agriculture. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. So why don't we jump right in? Lake, can you give us a little sense of the background of the project that you guys are embarking on for the summer?
Yeah, totally. So last semester, around October, both of us were thinking about plans after college and knew that we wanted to experience some type of adventure together. And so we came to the conclusion that we wanted to bike across the country, kind of have a adventure that would slow down the pace of college and give us some room to think. And then we started brainstorming about what we wanted to think about, how we wanted to make the trip engaging every day, and kind of a scavenger hunt of learning and figuring out more. So eventually we figured out that we were interested in talking to female farmers across the country. So our trip basically is about traveling from New York to San Francisco and on the way interviewing female farmers and producers and farm managers and kind of hearing their story and layering questions from each person along the way and sharing those questions and kind of creating a layered dialogue.
Ambitious project. How did you guys meet?
Our eyes met from across the art classroom freshman year in high school. And it's been fate since then.
And you're just finishing up your undergraduate, though, right?
Just finished.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So why don't you give us a sense of what you were studying and where you were studying?
I just graduated from Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, where I was studying anthropology. And that really centers on people, of course. I specifically was studying cultural anthropology and the anthropological approaches to the study of food. So looking at political, social, and cultural kind of intersections and where that all comes together around food. So my, you know, more academic, scholastic study and the field work that I've done in the Hudson Valley all have kind of pointed me towards this kind of thing. And I hope it'll come in handy with interviews and learning how people, particularly the women farmers that we're talking to, kind of make sense of their worlds.
Nice. And Lake, how about you?
I went to Oberlin College and studied studio art and environmental science. And yeah.
How did you get interested in food?
So I think it's been pretty much a narrative from the beginning. My parents started the school that I went to from kindergarten, and it was an earth-based oriented around learning to think through systems, and food was always a part of education. And then that string of interest continued through high school, continued through college, and has always been an important intersection of people, culture, and land.
So one of the things that I'm really curious, you know, when I was an undergraduate, and I think for a lot of listeners out there, there was no food studies program. That wasn't a piece of coursework that you could take. Did you find in your schools that those were established kind of programs or were established conversations that people were having? Or do you feel like you're still kind of on the forefront of these conversations of this movement?
During my time at Vassar, I saw it emerge completely. Of course, the professors and the you know, trailblazing students behind me definitely, I think, have been working on it for years. But for instance, one of my anthropology classes was the first kind of food-based class that incorporated field work at farms and in the garden. and the student-run garden that I've been involved in only started when I was a freshman. So all of it is very, very new, but I mean, in my college in particular, I think it's really flowering and growing a lot. And so I think that we are at the forefront, but it's something that is building all around us.
Yeah, I think it's a movement that's been happening for a while, but suddenly now there seems to be a lot of attention drawn to it. So it's not that it hasn't been happening, but suddenly it's named. So it's not that urban agriculture is necessarily new, but because there's a name to it, it's easier to remember, it's easier to grow awareness around it. So I guess it's a really fortunate time for us to be kind of harnessing that awareness.
And making different linkages in it.
I'm curious about this linkage, because obviously you are not just looking to create some kind of cyber community or written community, you're physically kind of making a space from like stop to stop. So maybe to back up from that a little bit, can you talk a little bit about the decision to focus specifically on women farmers?
Yeah, so what has already become... So when we were thinking about this project, we were doing a little bit of research, and we saw that since 2002, there's been, you know, this 30% increase in female farmers throughout the country, and that sparked our interest. But more than that, what has become really apparent since beginning to think more critically about this is that female farmers and producers are totally at the forefront of this movement. They comprise a huge number of the participants, but they're not the ones telling the stories. So it's not that they haven't been there and aren't there now, but their voices aren't being heard. So this is kind of an opportunity for us to not only learn from them, but also try to harness their perspectives and knowledge and make those voices louder.
Sure. So you have the anthropology background. I mean, kind of going into this, how formalized is the process of visiting the spaces? I mean, like, what's the kind of takeaway at the end of, you know, 3 months from now when you guys are on the West Coast eating tacos, living it up, hopefully? you know, what are you going to be able to turn around and point to and be like, yeah, we did that, or this happened, and how do you expect to kind of capture and then share those things?
Muscular thighs, I think we'll be able to point at those. You know, this project, while, like you mentioned, we have our concrete contributions of photo documentation, essays, articles, videos, you know, raising the voices and elevating the perspectives of everyone that we visit. This project at the same time for me is very open-ended, 'cause I am interested in what the women that we'll be talking to still need, and how perhaps as I move forward in forging a life for myself, how I can maybe be a part of that. And I don't know what that is yet. So in an adventure like this, I think that it just has to be open in a certain sense. And I think that the, you know, concrete contributions will come together as we go and, hopefully be more solidified towards the end.
So for folks out there who want to take a similar journey, can you talk a little bit about some of the kind of nuts and bolts logistics? Like, how are you funding it? What are you packing? Did you buy new bikes? How are you identifying farms to stop at along the way?
So this is a good moment to give a huge shout out to Patagonia Environmental Grants Program, because we applied through them and they are fully sponsoring our trip and have been a huge part in making this possible, and have been wonderful to work with as well. And there's a series of other sponsors we've reached out to, Organic Girl, Justin's Peanut Butter, there's been Justin's Nut Butter.
Heritage Food.
So people are pretty receptive to this project. I think that if you're interested in getting a project going, just start having the conversation. Start really putting yourself out there. It's kind of like treading through wet flour in the beginning, but then eventually when the ball gets rolling, it, you know, momentum picks up and it gets a lot easier. So that's kind of the sponsorship side of it and the growing awareness, making it fiscally possible. And then the equipment side.
Yeah, on the equipment side, Lake and I already had bicycles because we love to cycle. but it has been a constant process of adjustment, you know, getting our panniers, which are the bags that go over the back, and filling them with all sorts of tools and one pair of shorts, one pair of pants, you know, very, very simple, because we're carrying everything we're going to need. And that's another way that actually community has really entered this in an important way is, as well as getting in touch with a number of sponsors who can help us financially. We've also been beginning conversations with other women who have done this cross-country bike trip and other such adventures. And that collaboration has been so much fun for me, and they've been huge, in giving us practical, you know, advice about what to bring. One project is called CoCycle. It was a group of 12 Hampshire students who went across the country in 2012. Another project similar to ours that I think is really exciting is called Fresh Forks, and they're going north to south, and it's also two women visiting farms and learning more about this. So yeah, that collaboration between other women cyclists and food enthusiasts has been crucial.
And then when we were looking for farms, we decided we needed a few core advisors for the project that would help create connections with us in Forest and start the project moving forward. So we are working with Seven von Scharmer, who works, she's heading out the Greenhorns, located in the Hudson Valley, and she knows a ton of young farmers across the country. Then amigo Bob Contesano, who has been in the organic food movement for the past 30 years, out mainly in California, connected with us a huge number of female farmers. And then David Orr, who is an environmental professor and, you know, national author, has been helpful in helping us expand the dialogue between each other and with other farmers. And then beyond that, it's been looking at USDA organic, just looking for names and sending out emails and just...
Well, yeah. Because we're at the kind of the beginning of your trip, are there any physical spaces where you, you know, geographically you guys have some gaps that we can maybe do a shout out if anyone knows farmers in, I don't know, North Dakota or somewhere along the route that you're in particular need of some lodging or some space to visit?
Thank you. And kind of, at least a few come to mind. Western Nebraska seems to be full of big trucks, but not so many small-scale female farmers or ranchers, I think, is kind of the name of the game out there in terms of food production. Also, Western Wyoming and Southern Idaho. If anyone knows anyone there,
any connections?
Yeah,
out in the Midwest. Well, I want to ask you a question that comes up a lot in conversations we have here at the network and with other food professionals. And I'm hoping I'm not putting you guys too much on the spot, but there's often an accusation of elitism in the food world, and that, you know, there's like something where you're essentially like not creating access for a project like this to a diverse group of people. And I'm wondering, you know, as you're embarking kind of on your journey, and obviously you've done a ton of hard work kind of preparing for it and securing funding, you know, have you run into that question at all? I mean, there is a certain amount of privilege in being able to take the summer off to ride across the country. And how does that kind of come into the conversation for the two of you, or how do you kind of maintain sensitivity around that?
It plays a huge role for me. And creating this project has been in many ways a reflection of my own process of coming to understand my whiteness and my privilege. And that's something that we've stumbled on multiple times in creating the project, but then asked for the help and the guidance that we need in coming to understand our own shortcomings that arise from our privilege, our own blindnesses, and working to ameliorate them. So one advisor of ours that has been absolutely huge in that regard is Gail Myers. She operates the Farm to Grow network in Oakland, California, which increases access to resources for minority farmers, particularly farmers of color and women farmers. And so, yeah, at first, you know, our project said, hey, we're talking to female farmers. And then in looking at, quite frankly, the color of the faces of the farmers that we were featuring, they were all white female farmers. And that had to do with how we were looking, our kind of spatial conceptions of what a farm is. And so partway in the project, we just had to really fall down before we kind of realized the limitations in our own thinking. And that, fortunately, Gail Myers swept in and helped guide us through that. And then since then, we've realigned our kind of spatial conception of what a farm is and who a female farmer can be. So here in New York City and in Cleveland and in the Bay Area and other places, we're going to be visiting a lot more urban farms. And I think it goes back to what Lake was saying too, is that this movement isn't actually new. It's just like the new kind of people who are getting involved in it do tend to have that aspect of privilege like ourselves. But just yesterday we were talking to Karen Washington in the Garden of Happiness in the Bronx, and that amazing place has been around since 1988, which is a lot before, the timeline that we tend to think of as the good food movement. So just acknowledging that, you know, many people have come before us and made this possible, and working hard to see outside of ourselves a little bit in order to hear those voices and see that history and make that come alive.
That's great. We are going to move to just a quick break, and we come back. I want to talk a little bit about some plans for potential trouble and troubleshooting. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
Music for today's show is Third Degree Rug Burns by Tack Star. And once again, this is heritageradionetwork.org. The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate: an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit rt11.com.
All right, we are back in the studio, kicking off our summer of food with the lovely ladies of Shifting Gear. We're in the studio with Lake and Katrin. We got a little pronunciation guidance for my Midwest challenge dialect in the break. So what I want to check in about is, you know, the potential pitfalls of a cross-country bike journey, and kind of what you guys are maybe expecting with regards to weather or trails, and any kind of adventures or misadventures that you've kind of thought through or been advised to anticipate.
So when I told my mom that we wanted to bike across the country, she immediately went online and started looking up the best pepper spray the world had to offer. And so that's one of the weapons we've been granted from our parents. So I think there's some obvious safety issues being two females that we need to be aware of. I got some good advice in a gas station the other day. A man told me if it doesn't feel right, something's not right. And I think just being really conscious of being two white females going across the country, you know, the obvious kind of problems that lie there. And then there's, you know, we're biking during summertime, there's going to be extreme heat, so being really conscious of hydration and not getting stuck on really hot roads without any shade or anywhere to duck, you know, under a cool rock.
Well, I mean, I think that is the thing. I mean, there's like so many, there's so many kind of stories of lore of the like great American road trip, the great American cross country journey. And I think there is something in the modern day where for whatever reason, we're coming at it with a lot of, you know, fear or anxiety, especially for women. And so it's pretty rad that you guys are you know, going forth despite maybe some of those challenges. Can you tell me a little bit about how you selected your route? Because I know there's like lots of different, you know, options for travel.
I think the weather was one big aspect. I personally didn't have much interest in biking through the deep south in the height of summer. So I think that was one aspect. And, you know, then thinking about the Southwest is also extreme desert conditions. And it turned out that a number of, you know, the northern route that we chose were pretty much going along Highway 80, is, you know, going through incredible agricultural land. And I think particularly in spaces like Iowa and Nebraska and Idaho that are dominated by large-scale industrial monoculture, it became important to us to highlight the different spaces, the diverse spaces, where especially women are farming in small scale, you know, more sustainable, responsible ways. So yeah, staying northern for the weather and highlighting alternatives within the monocultural places.
Nice. And I know folks can kind of stay tuned in with your journey by following you through the Summer of Food. We'll be hearing from you once or twice a month. Going to give us a little podcast from the road. But if they want to follow you in other ways, what's the best way?
We have a website that you can go to, www.shifting-gears.com, and you can follow our stories there.
We also have a Facebook page just called Shifting-Gears, and please friend us, like us, and you'll see updates there.
And I know this is like the worst question to ask of any recent graduate, but are there plans at the end of your journey, or is the journey to make the plan for kind of next steps in your life or your career?
Well, I have a job in Los Angeles that will begin in the middle of September. I'll be working for the Fund for the Public Interest.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I think this trip was partially inspired to crystallize the intention for what type of work I wanted to go into after undergraduate, and what potential graduate school opportunities would make the most sense. So that's still a progress I'm in.
Work in progress. I'm wondering about, you know, kind of music on the road. I mean, that's like kind of one of those quintessential components, but you guys are going to be on bikes. So is that going to fit in any way? Do you have like a soundtrack to your trip?
Well, no real soundtrack, but we have a small computer we're bringing with us so that we can update our website and make our podcast and et cetera. And it doesn't have that much storage space, but there is enough room to fit in some 90s hip-hop and a few tunes to keep us happy while we're cooking dinner by the camp stove. And I imagine it's not going to be a huge part of our journey, but I'm sure wherever it fits in will be a nice treat.
Like engage with the music. That's awesome. So what am I forgetting to ask you about? Like, what other parts of the journey do you want to share as folks look forward to kind of following you over the next couple of months?
Well, I see Shifting Gears as being this epic journey through people and food and adventure, particularly what women have to say and contribute, and the way that we as women, you know, create those possibilities. So if you're interested in any of those things and want to hear about what's going on in Western Nebraska with, you know, female food producers, tune in.
Yeah, tune in. I like it.
Yeah, and I think also both of us are very open to learning a lot on this adventure. We have core questions that we're coming at it with, but also know that a lot of the body of information that we're going to be receiving are things that we hadn't necessarily thought of before. So please, if you have questions that you are interested in being involved with, adding to this conversation, please reach out to us, and we would love to hear your input. And you know, this is about other people's voices, what people are motivated and curious about talking about. So please join the conversation if you're interested.
Awesome. And for you know, the folks coming behind you, up and coming kind of food studies, or people who are interested in taking a closer look at the food and the food system, any recommendations for other kind of summer of food folks out there, or for maybe some high school students who are looking to select some of their fall curriculum? Any words of wisdom?
Start now. If you want to be a farmer, start your garden. If you want to read about food, get a book. I don't know. Just start now. Start talking. Go for it.
Don't overthink it. Get in there, right? Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I wish you both the best of luck. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you from the road, and then hopefully hosting you back on the East Coast sometime in the future.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Thank you, Erin.
Thanks to everyone out there for tuning in. Definitely visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the Summer of Food tab for more from the nation's next generation of food leaders. This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, are available for free as a download through iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio, or visit the website where you can find our donate tab. Please click. We are a member-supported organization and count on the support of our members to keep on bringing you great programs. So stay tuned in and keep listening. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.